Country with your host, Dave Wood. This is the radio show that puts country music front and center.
Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Saskatchewan country artist J.J. Voss will release his second album, Show 'Em Who's Voss, this April. The album, produced by Music City icon Harry Stinson, features the lead single, It's a Pride Thing. Raised on a small farm in rural Saskatchewan during tough economic times, J.J. grew up identifying with the underdog outlaw movement. His musical heroes include Johnny Cash, Steve Earle, and John Mellencamp. Let's welcome J.J. Voss to the show. Hey, J.J.
Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great this evening. How are things in Western Canada?
Good. It's good to be with you. We've had one of the nicest winters weather-wise ever.
And that's the same here in Ontario. It's just not been a hard winter.
No, it's plus two as we speak right now, and it's January the 31st. I've never experienced that.
That is awesome. Well, let's get into the music side of things here. And the album, I love the title of this, Show 'Em Who's Voss. Very clever.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Now, the lead single off it, which we're going to share on the show, is called It's a Pride Thing. And this kind of talks about working the farm and doing not something glamorous, but doing something for making an honest living, basically. And you grew up on a small farm, so this is obviously a song that you've lived the experience.
Yeah, the first verse is, it started out, it's basically about my dad and my mom and kind of how they, the way that we were raised. We grew up on an exceptionally small farm compared to the other neighbors around us and the other kids that I was going to school with. They were all kind of caught up in the race with trying to buy up as much land as possible. And Dad never ever went that route. He was more content just to not take on more than he could chew and that we needed. And our quality of life was a little bit better, I think, because of it, because we weren't working 24/7.
Yeah, so that obviously taught you some lessons based on that, the principle that he taught, and so I'm sure that's been reflected in your life, appreciating the simple things and not sacrificing your time for money.
Well, yeah, I guess the moral of the story is there's more important things in life than money, and just making sure that there was family time and I mean, don't get me wrong, we didn't go on vacations all that often or anything like that, but it was just,
right.
He didn't really want to take on a whole bunch of debt and get into that rat race.
Now, some of your earliest influences musically, we've got Johnny Cash, John Mellencamp, and Steve Earle, and the Steve Earle album that really hit home for you was Guitar Town, which a lot of us remember from the 80s. Tell us about the influence that album had on you.
Oh, it was right around the time that I had just kind of found, my dad had an old guitar kicking around, and I had been playing keyboards and earlier than that, a fiddle even before that, but I was messing around with this guitar, and when it came out, and what the songs were about, you know, was a song like Someday about, you know, wanting to escape and take off, and basically every song on that album really, really, I identified with each one of them.
So there's something about that underdog, somebody, maybe an outsider struggling to, I guess, find his place. And Steve Earle, as we're talking about, but also Johnny Cash and John Mellencamp, they have those same kind of messages in their songs.
Well, yeah, and that's similar to how, like, the small community where I went to school, it was very much a sports, it was kind of a jock town. It was a sports-oriented town. And we never really were into that. Our family wasn't really that inclined that way. And politically, there was differences as well. It was a very, very, very right-wing kind of community, and our family was historically not. So in some ways, we kind of grew up feeling like outsiders.
Right. Now, the cool thing about all that is not only did that find its way into your musical style, but the producer of some of Steve Earle's albums, Harry Stinson, is the producer on your current album that's coming out called Show 'Em Who's Boss. How did you hook up with this Music City producer who's so well known? He's worked with not only Steve Earle, but he's produced albums for Martina McBride, Marty Stewart, and Canada's own Cor Blund.
Yeah, well, he was actually Steve Earle's original drummer in the Dukes when Guitar Town was recorded. He moved back from, he was working with Peter Frampton in Los Angeles at the time when he got the call from Tony Brown. Tony Brown was Steve Earle's first producer in Nashville when Guitar Town broke. And right. Harry moved back to Nashville to join the band. And in that, through the late 80s and throughout the 90s, I mean, Harry was on every album that I told Harry he's been on and played on more hit records than I own. And so to work with him was truly, it was a dream come true, really. I met him, I work behind the scenes in production as an audio engineer, as well as, you know, my music career. And it was at a festival. Marty Stewart was playing at the Craven Country Jamboree a few years back, and his sound guy didn't clear customs at the border. So we got the call that Marty was showing up without a sound guy. So I was there at the event working it, and I wound up mixing the show, and then I met the band and got to visiting. And it was pretty innocuous at the time. I just shook hands with him and got chatting with him. Then it was a year or 2 years later in Nashville, I ran into him at a showcase that Cor Blund was playing during the Americana Association Festival. And he had actually remembered me from that, from the Craven Jamboree, just because I had him sign a gold record. I had managed to find Guitar Town, a gold album that was kicking around at a pawn shop. And nice, being that Harry played on the album, I got him to sign it, and he remembered that. And then we got chatting, and he gave me his phone number, and I guess the rest is history.
You never know, that story goes to prove, you never know when a break is going to come, right? I mean, just such an accidental kind of thing, and that's what started all this.
Well, that's kind of how the industry works. It's that whole networking thing and just, you know, getting to know people and you know, making a personal connection.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, you recorded the album at Omni Studios in Nashville, and I understand that growing up you would see that name on albums, and here you are now having recorded your album in that studio.
Yeah, it was a thrill, you know, walking down the hallway in the reception room, and you see these gold records hanging on the wall that are all in my, well, they were back, I'm dating myself now, but I had them when they were cassettes. We'll put it that way. So,
I know what you mean. I love
to be working in the same place and to be doing it was truly a thrill.
That is awesome. Well, I want to play It's a Pride Thing, which is the lead single from Show 'Em Who's Boss, the album. It's coming out in early April. People can head to jjboss.com to keep up with you. And there's other links there to other sites. But before I play the song, you talked a bit about it before, but what's the main message, JJ, that you want people to get when they hear this song, the main theme in it?
I guess the main theme in the song would be, you know, just taking comfort in the little things and not necessarily, you know, sometimes you miss the coolest things when they're right in front of you because you're looking past them.
I love that. That's great. This is J.J. Voss and a great song from him called It's a Pride Thing on In the Country.
I'm turning dirt all day on a worn-out plow, making the bills by the sweat of his brow, but he sleeps real good when he lays down at night. Now he don't make much, so he lives real lean. His hands are dirty, but the money's clean. And there's something about standing on your own. This ain't no story about chasing dreams. It ain't about reaching for the big brass ring. It's about working for what you need. It's a pride thing. Had a got counter on her feet all day. It's a dead end job, but she don't complain. With the kid at home, you do what you gotta do. When you're shopping for clothes at the secondhand store, it ain't about Vogue, it's making sure that they've always got enough to get them through. Well, this ain't no story about chasing dreams. It ain't about reaching for the big brass ring. It's about working for what you need. You know what I mean. Yeah, it's a pride thing. Fall down, what picked you up? Working 14 years down a nickel mine wasn't exactly what he had in mind, but when the shift's done, he leaves it all behind. He's got a beautiful girl and a couple of kids. He's their world and their head, but it ain't a little thing when you've got peace of mind. This ain't no story about chasing dreams. It ain't about reaching for the big brass ring. It's about working for what you need. You know what I mean. Well, this ain't no song about chasing dreams. And it ain't about reaching out for big brass ring. It's about working for what you need. You know what I mean.
Saskatchewan country artist J.J. Voss, and that is called It's a Pride Thing. That will be the lead single off of the upcoming album from him with a great title called Show 'em Who's Voss, produced by Music City icon Harry Stinson. Great sounding song. I can definitely hear that on the radio, J.J., so I wish you all the best with it. It's really got a contemporary country sound to it.
Well, I hope you're right. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, it sounds terrific. I wanted to ask you about your mom's side of the family, because I understand they were quite musical and would get together and do little jam sessions and weekend shows, that kind of thing.
Yeah, musically, I guess that influences musically came from my mom's side of the family. She always had a real love of the fiddle. Two of her brothers were fiddle players, and then she had some cousins that were that played fiddle as well, and she had a deep love of the fiddle. So when I was young, when I was like 3 or 4 years old, they bought me this little tiny fiddle, and I started out on that, and I guess it was evident, or I got started, they could tell that I had an ear for it, but it really wasn't. Being the small community that I was from, there really wasn't anybody that was a school teacher that could really.
Okay.
So when they saw that I kind of had a knack for it, my folks wanted to get me into. Obviously, sports wasn't really. I didn't have interest in it, and that wasn't my thing. So they wanted to get me into some kind of organized, some kind of training of some sort, and around that town there was church organists, I guess. There was a few churches around town, and the minister's wife was teaching organ lessons.
Oh, great.
Well, kind of, I suppose. When you're growing up in a small town that's I guess where sports is king, you're not necessarily the coolest, hippest cat when you're cutting out of school to go play church hymns.
This is true. It's true. The other kids might not appreciate that at the time.
Well, yeah, I guess that's one way of putting it. So from there, when I discovered the guitar, it was just kind of a natural fit.
Wow. And can you recall when you started writing your own songs? When did that come along?
Not till later. I was trying to, or I suppose... when I was like 14, 15, 16. I was ready. I had aspirations of doing it, but I didn't know the first thing about it, and I didn't know how to. And I suppose, and another thing was, is when you go and you put something like that, would be exposing yourself and would be opening yourself up personally, and to put that in front of other people was scared the living daylights out of me.
That is a vulnerable place to be in, sharing your ideas and not sure if the other person is going to say, you know, that isn't any good.
Well, yeah, and when you don't have any peers, like when all of your peers are playing hockey and ball and that kind of thing, the thought of stepping out and saying, hey, I just wrote a song, check this out, it never dawned on me. It was something you just didn't do.
Now, later on, of course, you've gone on to write songs and you know, Clayton Bellamy and Mike Flume are a couple of the writers on the album. How do you feel now to be co-writing and coming out with these great songs? I mean, there's a song on the album. It's going to be on the current album. It's The Night I Hit the Wall, which has such a unique, cool sound to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like the whole process of songwriting, I'm still quite novice at it, or I'm learning. Every time that I get together with more seasoned writers, I learn so much. And I think the biggest part is just gaining the confidence to just throw things out and never throwing anything away. Just always jot something down and then move forward. There's not a cooler feeling in the world or something that bolsters your confidence more than sitting down and coming up with something that and coming back to it the next day and say, hey, that's all right.
Yeah, indeed. And do you have I'm sure it varies, but a place or a time of day that the ideas come to you? Are you watching TV and you'll hear somebody say something, or you use your imagination? How would you generate a song idea?
For me, I'm not as prolific as other writers, where I'm not always coming up with something, but it is that kind of thing where I'll hear a hook, or I'll hear a phrase, I'll hear something said cleverly, or because I talk a lot, sometimes when my mouth gets rattling, I'll spit something out that kind of sounds clever, so I'll jot it down as an idea type thing. And for the most part, when I've been on my own, it's when I take off in my vehicle and when I head out to go visit my folks out at the farm, and when all the distractions are gone, you know, you don't have the internet in front of you all the time, and you're actually when you're devoid of distractions, that's when I'm able to come up with the most, or when I'm most productive.
Now, on the new album, will you be doing any outside songs that you haven't written? Did you pick any of those, or are they all yours?
No, these are all going to be co-writes. There's going to be two on there that I wrote by myself, and the other six are going to be done as co-writes with other people that I've done.
Great. Do you have favorite covers, JJ, that you like to do at your shows? Maybe an old Steve Earle song or Johnny Cash. You cover any of those guys?
Almost embarrassingly, it's when it comes to Steve Earle songs, I could just go and go and go, but I'm not sure the audience really appreciates it as much as I do. but again, the Mellencamp tunes and the Petty tunes. I'm a big Tom Petty fan. I love playing Tom Petty songs live. And Blue Rodeo was another great big band for me as a kid.
I love Blue Rodeo. Yeah,
like the Jim Cuddy songwriting is, you know, second to none.
I interviewed Jim actually just last week. He was terrific to talk to, and you're right, his songs, the writing and the lyrics in them are just beautiful.
Yeah, and he's one guy that a person misses, like as far as listing as influence, but I have to, there's no doubt about it that those earlier albums, you know, I was most influenced through my teen years, through between the ages of probably 13 and 18 by music like that was coming out, and like Lost Together and songs like that just left such a, you know, mark on me. They're such well-written songs.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Now, the live shows, what's the feeling you get? And talk about how much you enjoy getting up on stage and, you know, entertaining the crowd and maybe even seeing them sing along to a couple of the songs.
Yeah, well, I've been playing music a long time. I started my first band where we actually did paying gigs in our first paying gig was for a town fair, but we started doing bars the year after when I was 15 years old. So I've been doing it a long time, but there's no greater thrill now than actually going and doing a show, doing my own songs, and seeing somebody sing along to it. That's the ultimate thrill right there.
Now, your voice is so distinctive, and it's just got a great quality to it. Do people tell you you sound like someone, like, you know, do they try to put you, in a good way, but just say they remind you of a certain someone?
That's the one thing that I think I'm fairly lucky with. I don't know if my voice itself, the timbre of my voice, is really, I don't know if it parallels with many people that are of the genre that I'm doing. So
right.
that's almost a good thing. That's because
some
people say, well, you sound just like such and such. I suppose mannerisms in my live show, as far as what I look like on stage, I guess it's not much of a secret. I do probably come across with my stage banter, my presence, similar to a guy like Steve Earle.
There you go. There you go. The influence runs true, doesn't it?
Well, I guess there's worse things to be influenced by.
This is true. That is a good thing. No, that's terrific. Let's turn to another song, and this has got its own unique kind of sound to it. It's called Time for Change. Not only a great sound to it, but also a great message in it. What can you tell us about writing this one? And I believe you wrote it along with Mike Flume?
Yeah, with Mike on that one. In talking about the songwriters that, you know, that I regard highly, like Jim Cuddy, like Steve Earle, like Johnny Cash, those writers, they didn't write a lot of bubblegum songs. They wrote songs that were, some of them were, you know, they're activists. Some of them were about social commentary. They weren't just throwaway songs. They were about stuff. And, you know, that's really important to me, and that's really the big motivator for me to really develop my writing, is because I got stuff that I want to say, whether people not want to believe or like agree with me or not, that's another story. But I always said that I wanted to write a song that would change the world, and when we sat down to write this with Mike Flume, I brought that up, and I had a song title and I had a melody, and I think I had half of the chorus figured out,
right?
And as we talked and we talked, we're drinking coffee and visiting about this idea. There was something going on. There was a guy in New York that was getting really famous by threatening to burn the Koran down by the World Trade Centers.
That's right. I remember that.
It was absolutely disgusting. And that's all that was all on TV at the time. So, you know, it really kind of fit with this idea, you know, why can't we just, with the amount of hatred that's was going on in the world between different religions and all these wars going on, it would be just great to set that aside. And when Mike had just made a point, he says, well, maybe let's not worry about everybody else. Why don't we just, you know, look at yourself? And if everybody is to take a look in the mirror and clean up their own backyard, you know, the analogy is you'll live in a beautiful neighborhood.
Yes,
and
yes,
so that's kind of where the song went to. We were just, if everybody kind of had a look at themselves and made a few changes, the world would be a better place.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song, and I found myself after listening to it a few times almost singing it afterwards, because the melody is quite catchy, and it's just, it's a powerful song, especially when so the chorus kicks in and the background singers join in with you.
Yeah, they did. Harry and his girlfriend Beth, they arranged the vocals on it. They did such a great job on it. Brought in a lady to do backup vocals who had worked with Wynonna Judd, and she was a black lady, so she brought that whole gospel feel to it. And Beth is a very, she had a very when she opened up doing, she had a very gospel flavored timbre about her voice as well. So it was really, really neat.
Nice. Well, let's share this song now that we've been talking about. It's called Time for Change. This is J.J. Voss here on In the Country.
Feels like it's time for a change. Let go of the hatred, let go of the pain. I see a storm cloud coming, whoa, bring on the rain. Feels like it's time, time for a change. I haven't found, but when you don't feel right in your own skin, you gotta look deep down within. It feels like it's time for a change. It feels like it's time for a change. Let go of the hatred. Time for a change. Yeah, starting right now. Got a responsibility on the shoulders of you, the shoulders of me. Don't you feel like it's time for a change?
And that is J.J. Voss. He joins me on the line from Saskatchewan, a song called Time for Change, and that'll be featured on his upcoming album called Show 'em Who's Voss. That song must go over well at the shows you've performed it at.
Yeah, that one's it's pretty powerful, and it really does connect with the audience.
Now, you've opened some shows in the past for Johnny Reed and the Roadhammers, and you've also done some stuff in Nashville. What's it like warming up the crowd for these artists?
The Johnny Reed show was a really big one because it was he was a headliner for our fair. So there was something like 7,500 to 10,000 people in the park. So that was, fantastic. And the trip to Nashville was very, very neat. It was Raul Mallow was just warming up for he was releasing his solo album, and he was just getting ready to head out on tour. So we were on before him at a club called 12th and Porter. And playing a show in Nashville is a dream come true to begin with, and then to be opening for a guy like Mallow, who the Mavericks were one of my heroes as well. It was really, really neat.
Yeah, and Raul, many people know, formerly the lead singer of the Mavericks, and they had such a cool, distinctive sound as well.
Yeah, they were definitely, when a Mavericks tune came on, you knew it was them.
That's right. Now, your first album was Hillbilly Storybook, And you did that one on your own. What were the challenges, JJ, of that? Because you didn't have Harry Stinson, and I don't believe it was done in Nashville. You basically did this. You organized it all.
Yeah, I did that one pretty much. Like I had other players on it, but I recorded and produced the whole thing myself, and it was more than anything, you know, it was a way to get started in the business selling my own music. I learned everything kind of from the ground up, right? Just from, and that was the whole idea behind it. It's hard to get other people interested in. Prior to that, I was a side guy guitar player and a sound guy for a lot of years. So it's hard to get people interested in what you're doing if you, well, they say, well, you're a guitar player, you're just a sound guy. What do you? So I went about this thing all myself, and it was challenging. It was very, very hard, but I learned a lot.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, that whole process going through it. Did anybody give you any advice along the way that you've been able to put to use, like some really valuable advice that helped you along?
Well, I guess more so than anything, the people that I did work with are very, very seasoned people. There's a studio in town that a couple of brothers, their name is the Churko brothers, Kevin Churko. He's produced Ozzy Osbourne's last two albums. And his brother, Corey, is playing guitar. He played with Shania Twain when she was on tour, and I think he's working with Kelly Clarkson now. They're originally from here, and they worked at a studio that's like three blocks from my house. So back, around 2000 to 2002, I was a fly on the wall, hanging out, watching, and trying to soak up as much as I can and learning, you know, the art of recording. And you know, went from there. There's some other guys too. Johnny Gasparic on the first record engineered some of the stuff with me, and he taught me a lot about engineering and, again, the art of recording. So I definitely learned from some great people.
Yeah, it's a great way of doing it because there's no sense in reinventing the wheel. You can learn from these people who have done it and had successful projects and see the way they do it. Now, do you have advice based on what all you've learned, JJ, for, say, somebody tuning in and maybe they're a songwriter, maybe they're a singer and they are performing at local venues or bars, but they want to take it to the next step and get some attention and record a CD? What would the steps be or just general steps they could do to move forward?
Just in general, I think for me, speaking for myself, confidence is the number one thing. It's really, really hard. You need to be confident in what you're doing, and you need to don't downplay what you're doing. I got advice from Ray McGuire from Trooper, who happened to be, I was working a show. And I had mentioned to him, I said, have a listen to my little CD here. And he stopped me dead in my tracks. He says, why would I want to have a listen to a little CD? He said, I want to listen to a great big CD. He goes, I want to hear this is the best thing that you've ever heard. And he said, that's what you need to tell me. So that really left, it was a good lesson to learn. You'd never ever downplay what you're doing.
That is great advice right there because you've got to have the confidence in yourself in order to sell yourself to others, because if you sell yourself short, then they're just going to move on to the next person.
Yes, before others do. And it's kind of an odd thing because of my upbringing, my family, my folks are very meek and very humble. But I mean, there's a fine line between being confident and going over the line and coming across as arrogant. And I hope I don't straddle that line too closely.
You're right. There is such a fine line there, but confidence is definitely a good thing to have. I wanted to ask you about duets, JJ. I'm sure Steve Earle's name would come up, but is there somebody that comes to mind if you, down the road for a project, were going to record a duet? It could be with another male artist, one of those kind of duets that are so popular, or it could be typical male-female duet. Does anybody come to mind you'd like to work with on one of those?
That's a great question. I can't say that I've thought too much about it. There's one song that actually I'm going to be recording tomorrow. We're going to be recording three more songs to finish off the album here tomorrow that I co-wrote with Patricia Conroy. And,
oh, great.
I can't say that I haven't thought of getting her to sing on the session to do it, because she's an angel. Like, she sings like an angel, and she's just a great, great person.
Definitely. That is so cool. That would be a nice matching up of your two voices. So you guys wrote a couple of songs together? Or this particular song?
Just the one to start with. Yeah, just this.
Yep.
It's called Pull Away. That was the first time I'd written with Patricia, and it went really, really smoothly. Just afternoon, and came out with a pretty neat little song.
That's great. She, of course, we all know, a great Canadian country artist. Now she's focusing on the songwriting side of things, and she's got another song out from Jimmy Rankin that she co-wrote. There's another one prior to that, Here in My Heart. Now there's a new one out that she co-wrote, so great to be songwriting with her.
Yeah, she is amazing. Like, she's as good as it gets in not just Canada, but in country music as far as writers go and as far as performers. She's like my generation's Emmylou Harris.
Right, yes. She's got the voice and the songwriting skills, and just terrific. JJ, it's been such a pleasure spending this time with you, sharing some new songs that will be on the forthcoming album, Show 'Em Who's Voss, and people can learn more about you and follow the progress of that. They can go to Facebook, ReverbNation/JJVoss, or simply JJVoss.com. Thanks so much for the time, and it's been great chatting with you.
Well, it was great to be with you, Dave. Thanks a lot for having me.
My pleasure. My guest today has been Saskatchewan country artist JJ Voss. I'm Dave Woods, and that'll wrap up this edition of In the Country.